The time now is 1 p.m. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind coming up.
Everybody, Ben Starr and Kevin O'Donohue with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today, we have a very interesting concept and a very interesting guest to introduce you to. Dara Williams joins us here in the studio on West 57th Street. Dara, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Dara's here to tell us a little bit about AFOT, or Aboriginal Focusing Oriented Therapy, which is an offshoot of Focusing Oriented Therapy.
And you've
heard about that on The Positive Mind over the years. And we have Dara here to tell us a little bit more about the work that she does. Dara, you're a therapist and mental health worker, mental health professional here in the New York area for how many years?
About 25.
Wow. And how long ago did you come to understand this modality?
I first came in contact with AFOT about 12 years ago now, and I came into contact with it through the focusing community, through the focusing organization, but would like to draw the distinction. So Aboriginal Focusing Oriented Psychotherapy is a form and technology of doing therapy that was being done in Canada by a woman named Shirley Turcott, who's a Métis woman who lives there. In Canada, they have the distinction Métis, which is a person who is part Native American, part Indigenous, I should say, and part of European descent. And just another distinction as we go along in terms of educating, you know, also in Canada, people refer to themselves as Indigenous and not as Native American. Native American is a United States terminology. So just because we can be correct about how we're speaking.
And what is Aboriginal?
Well, Aboriginal, the aspect of Aboriginal is actually connecting to the land, you know. So Aboriginal people are the people who were in existence in the land before colonization, before contact with whomever else came at that point. That's, so it's a way to get really connected to the historical component of the philosophy.
I see. Mm-hmm. And somehow getting in contact with that is healing?
Well, it's a remembering, it's a remembering, and there's another name for it that's out here now, which I can't quite remember. Bonnie Durand, one of my Native American colleagues, would lash me if she knew that I couldn't remember the name. Okay. But it has been a devaluing of other ways of knowing in our culture for a very long time.
Yeah.
But actually what we're speaking about is a remembering of the value of other ways of knowing that we've kind of have gone underground or that have been lost or repressed or suppressed or colonized. Because for what the AFOT work does is actually is a form of decolonizing the mind. There's a lot of the mental illness and mental, not even illness, but the mental dis-ease of living in today is the result of the mind being colonized. So there's a large component of AFLT, which is about decolonizing the mind. And that goes for all of us. It doesn't matter if you're a person of color, a person of European descent. Doesn't matter. All of our minds are colonized,
especially here in the United States. How do our minds get colonized?
Because we grow up in habituated patterns and because of racism, structural oppression, structural poverty, you know, all the things that we're confronting actually on a cultural or a societal basis in the United States right now. The conditions that we're living in right now are the result of colonization.
So is AFOT a way for us to confront this on an individual level?
And on an individual level and on a cultural or societal level. Okay. Absolutely, because there's really no, the individual exists within the context sure. of the community.
Of course.
And so there's healing in both places, or opportunities for awareness and wholeness and wisdom to come from both positions. Absolutely.
So somebody who knows that they're coming to an AFOT session knows that they're going to get in touch with something beyond themselves. Is that fair to say?
Well, I can tell you, just in thinking about how people come to me, that people come to me not because they know anything about AFLT. Like when they're okay. researching me or responding to something that one of my clients is speaking about, mm. what they come behind is understanding that I do work in intergenerational trauma. That's what people are, they don't know it's called AFLT or whatever, mm-hmm. whatever. But they come because they're interested. There's something within that knows that the way out, or one of the ways out through understanding of self, is through intergenerational understanding.
And so it helps to know what grandma went through, or what grandpa or great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa went through.
Absolutely.
Because you might have a felt sense in your body, in your psyche, as the colonization becomes unbearable or whatever, that here's the opening. I don't want to be colonized anymore. And all of a sudden I get a sensation or a remembering of something beyond my own lifespan to right. another time, to my intergenerations.
Right. And it's not even so much that it's helpful to know the stories yeah. of our ancestor. That's helpful. Yeah. But it's actually the body patterns that we're interested in. So in an AFLT session, for instance, it wouldn't be so much that we're interested in the story.
Okay.
Because the story actually keeps us up here in the cognitive mm. realm. What we're actually looking at is, what is the experience of that story in the body?
Okay.
So what's the physical, physiological, emotional, because the felt sense is not feeling. So I don't want people to collapse that or
not feeling. You mean on an emotional level?
Right. It's yeah. not an emotional. Right. Exactly.
It's a physical feeling.
It's a physical feeling.
Okay.
It's a intersection of a physical feeling and a knowing yeah. like an unconscious know before something becomes actual.
Like a gut sense.
A precognitive. Yes, exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
So it's almost like where are you feeling your stress, your pain, your hurt, your worry? Where do you carry that in your body?
Partially, yes. So, you know, someone may say something verbally, and we might say, if you're using an AFLT paradigm, you might say, so checking in there, where might that be there? And we don't even want to say there in the body, because we don't want to place anything in the body that's not there. So you might say something like, just checking in there, sitting in the seat.
Mm.
Where are you experiencing that? And then they'll say whatever. They'll say, oh, you know, it's, I don't know, it feels like there's a little something in my stomach.
Right
there's
under
something
my left
there.
Rib.
Right, right. Something yeah. there under my left rib. Okay. So over there under your left rib, okay, can you tell me more about that? Like, is it tight? Is it loose? Is it cold? Is it hot? And we might really explore the actual sensation that the person.
And what's it saying to you? Do you go that far? Do you ask them, like, for me,
I can
immediately tell a whole story from this pain that I really
sometimes
do continually have under my left rib. And I'm sure it's got a huge emotional component to it. And when I let it speak to me, you know, it's telling me to stop beating me up, stop abusing me. You know?
Well, we might go there,
okay.
but it might not be the first place we go, because we want to keep opening it up. Because again, interpretation,
I like
right?
That.
We want to move the cognitive process out of the way,
right.
and actually be able to be present with that sensation that's happening for you in your body.
So
what we might think it might mean this, or might be saying that, but if you continue opening it up, a lot of times you end up in a place where you wouldn't have even imagined that you'd find yourself.
We had a guest just over the summer told us a little bit about epigenetics and how trauma is something that can actually be passed on generation to generation. That was fascinating and eye-opening, certainly for me and for a lot of people who wrote us emails about this guest. And we recently had another guest who told us a little bit about the link between physical and mental health and how closely tied those two are, and examples of that. And it sounds like what I'm hearing in a lot of what you're telling us is that there's a lot of both of those elements within AFOT. There is the inherited cycle of trauma, whether that's a, you know, a genetic, familial, or cultural trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's also this link between the physical and the emotional, the physical and the mental, where you're asking people to see where that trauma may be manifesting in physical ways. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say, and I would expand on that and not just say that they're linked, but actually that they're inseparable. But it's just in our training, the way we're enculturated here, that we forget about the body oftentimes, particularly in the United States, maybe even more particularly in New York, I don't know. But, you know, that we spend a lot of time negating or devaluing or not being aware of or paying attention to what the body is saying.
Right.
And the body actually is the place of wisdom, because the mind is filled with so many other things besides that, that a way of getting to the mind is through the body.
And so everybody knows that the mind, everybody knows that the mind doesn't have the answer or all of the answers. But how about trying this on, trying to go to your own wisdom through your body? And I like how you don't rush it. You don't let people go into their story right away. I was ready to go right into my story right there, you know, because I want to tell it, you know, and I think that the truth is at the end of my telling it. And yet it keeps coming back and coming back. But I like how you say, wait, we're not going to go into your story. Just let's get the color of it.
Yeah, and I might even say, because you're right, some people haven't been listened to. So for some people, the story may be the wanting to tell the story may be the priority or of what's
yes.
really present for them.
Right.
And so I, as you experience, you know, I might say, well, that's really terrible, or that's really, like, I get that. I get that. And so now let's put that over
right.
there. This is called clearing space. Let's put that over there. Like, where would you like to put that? How far in front of you would you like to put that? Because we want to make the room for whatever's underneath that to
uh-huh.
come forward.
So yeah. you give a physical sensation of space so the person can identify an inner space.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
To further go deeper into this. First of all, I find like people are fascinated. People come to therapy and they're just fascinated that they're listened to. You know, so they do want to get out their story right away. But, you know, I like the end. Okay, so you have this story. There's so much here. There's so much more to go. Watch what happens when you're listened to, when you get to say what's on the surface first, and then watch where we go with it.
Yeah, I think you're pointing to, and one of the things that I appreciate about AFLT is that it's fairly integrative, and it doesn't value one more over the other,
right.
and that there's an understanding that the way through is through making space. For whatever shows up here to show up here. Like, we're not keeping anything out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to work with whatever shows. And I'm going to, my teacher in this AFLT, Shirley Turcotte, she has a saying which I absolutely love. And when I say this to people, they totally get it. It's like, so we want to go to hell, put our feet up, and have a cup of tea.
Welcome to therapy.
So, you know, really building the capacity to be comfortable with the uncomfortable. And to really understand that it's only uncomfortable because of our interpretations, judgments, and assessments
yes.
about what it is.
And where do those come from?
Well, that's,
you know,
the colonization.
So, yes, exactly. So people who come to AFOT and do this AFOT process are being welcomed to show up with all of who they are. It's a person, believe this, it's a person-centered psychotherapy.
Absolutely. The way we refer to it is client-centered, therapist-driven.
Nice.
Because when people are in a trauma state, or when flashbacks are present, or people are reactive, they can't drive it. They're not in their bodies. They're not present.
Yes.
So the therapist is not determining where you're going, but we're tracking what you're putting into the space and moving that forward.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many concepts I want to talk about. Tell me about, because when somebody suffers trauma, we talk about memory. And remembering, and so often, you know, there are scandals in therapy about finding false memories, you know, but how can you do therapy without memories? I mean, you need to remember. You do contact early stage trauma. No, and now you're telling us that with Aboriginal focused orient, you go even beyond contact with the trauma from a life beyond the one that you're living to the past. So tell us some about remembering and about the
generational
aspect of
it. You might want to think about it in a slightly different way, because I don't know if it's so much about remembering as much as it is about uncovering. So it's there.
Yes, okay.
You know, it's there. There's nothing new that we're putting in here. There's no place we're getting back to.
Mm-hmm.
It's always there. And that's why the usefulness of entering or engaging the body as the information center is really good, because the body's not making up stories. The body's not remembering through cognitive, because we know as therapists that memories can be influenced by a lot of things.
Yes, indeed.
But for the most part, the body, if you interpret or come to understand whatever the trauma place is as it's manifesting or coming through the body, you're going to get a clear memory of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I love that, uncovering. People can see that like an onion, being peeled. We come down to just layer after layer. That is part of the journey.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the importance of the observer in this process, because there's some people who just don't have a good fit with this kind
That's
of therapy,
correct.
Right?
That's correct. And so
tell us about
we're
that.
We're not proposing or saying that AFLT is for everybody.
Yeah.
And for some people who aren't wired that way, you might do cognitive behavioral therapy or dialectic therapy or one of the other therapies.
Sure.
But if the person indicates one of the things that I'm going to relate back to Jendlin, even though this is not the same, if you recall, it sounds like you all have spoken about
here in the studio.
And one of the things that Eugene came to was kind of the seed for what he developed was noticing and observing people in therapy, and noticing some people naturally had the ability to check in to the body and see what was going on, pause, and then come forward.
Okay.
So that's an aspect of observing self that we're talking about, you know.
So you know somebody's practiced at self-observation when they do that, when they have that pause,
when in how they speak about something.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a skill, or it's a way of being that's not necessarily cultivated to a great degree.
Yes, yes, yes.
So you can take somebody who maybe doesn't come into your office and have that ability. If they have the seed for it, can cultivate it with them over time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. That's so concrete. There's a visual for you, Ben. When you see a client who actually pauses and says, wait a second, let me think about that before I give an answer, you know you have somebody who might fit within this modality,
mm-hmm.
who might be able to. So tell us what observing does. What is it in the session?
Well, it's not an it. That's what is it?
Come on, I want to nail this down.
It's not an it, Kevin. it's more of a being. It's more of a way of being, a way of knowing oneself that kind of has the capacity to move the cognating mind to the side and just checking in with the, I think Ben said earlier something about intuition or that gut feeling, being able to tap into or connect into that gut feeling.
So what you're looking, it sounds like, you're looking to empower people's awareness. You want to help people develop that sense of awareness on all levels, but with a big impact and a big emphasis on the physical level. Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
If
mm-hmm.
you're just joining us, you're tuned into 99.5 FM WBAI. It's The Positive Mind. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue. Our guest today, Dara Williams, who's telling us about AFOT, stands for Aboriginal Focusing Oriented Therapy. And it's a very interesting modality. We've spoken of focusing oriented therapy. This is certainly a version of that. If this has got you interested and you'd like to learn more, you can reach her at ngonzi71@yahoo.com. And Dorot, you're going to be hosting a workshop right here in Manhattan in early January.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to tell people a little bit about that, especially since you agreed to give WBAI listeners a special rate, a $35 early bird rate, $50 at the door for BAI listeners. And that's January 7th. You're going to be hosting this AFOT workshop here in Midtown Manhattan. Tell us more about what goes into that.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be a couple hours. I don't remember if it's 10 to 12:30 or 9:30 to 12, whatever it is. But it's a morning on January 7th. And we're actually, it's a workshop. But the way to think about it is that it's like an introduction.
Sure.
Because there's a big component or a big aspect of AFOT that's experiential. That's not something you talk about. It's not something you can read about linearly and get a real depth understanding of it. You have to experience the processes and the practices. So this intro is an opportunity for people to come and experience AFOT so that they can ascertain for themselves a couple of things. Whether one, if there's somebody that's in the human service field, whether they might like to learn this technology to bring forward. And that's for teachers, mental health workers, doctors, people that are in service to people. Yeah. Or if it's someone who's not in the field but wants to know if this format is really useful for them, they can come and experience, and then they can go and we can help them find a therapist who practices AFOT. Yeah, so kind of that double opportunity for people.
So they'll actually experience something coming to the workshop. It's not
just
going to be a bunch of information.
Oh,
there'll be demonstrations.
There'll be very little information.
Isn't that wonderful?
Don't come if you are interested in sitting
down,
back and us
notes.
Pouring it into your head.
Yeah,
No. You're going to be engaged and utilizing and working.
Tell the info again, Ben.
That's going to be January 7th, this January 7th. In the morning, and there's a special rate for BAI listeners, $35 early bird rate, $50 at the door, and you can reach Dara at ngonzi71@yahoo.com. That's ngonzi71@yahoo.com.
And I wonder if it's for anybody who suspects, you know, has the early stage sensation that I'm feeling traumatized in some way, or I'm feeling symptoms, I'm feeling certain things, and I look at my family, I look at my parents, I look at my grandparents, I look at my lineage, and I suspect that I'm carrying some of this stuff.
I think what you just described would be totally appropriate, and I think that the other appropriate way people might think about it is if they're experiencing or aware of their own personal trauma, some personal trauma they had either in childhood or even as adult, you know, it doesn't have to be childhood, that also oftentimes it's linked into or tied back to, not the trauma is tied back to ancestral or intergenerational, but the responses and the reactions and how one is navigating it in the present can be tied into the intergenerational piece. So it's both. It's both. Whether you're aware of some intergenerational, and you know, really, in the world, I was going to say in this country, but there's not one group of people that ancestrally don't have major trauma, historically speaking.
Nah, I guess so. Because as you're talking, I'm thinking about my own Irish-American heritage, my Irish grandfathers, and what they went through in the colonization of Ireland by England, and the shame and all the fighting that went on to free the country as best they can. And I, you know, there are moments, and you talk about the body, but there are moments when I feel my grandfather, or even my great-grandfather, you know? I mean, I have certain tendencies that sometimes something gets opened up in me and I feel a connection to something beyond any other experience I've had in this life and to this life, but is connected to something else. Do people often have sensations and certain feelings during an FOT session that makes them say, wow, this is my grandfather. Like,
I think people have definitely have an experience. They may not interpret it that way, and how they might interpret it is that space and freedom opens up for them. So they may not attribute it to a grandparent or a great grandparent or whatever, but they are aware of some real both release and opening, and space showing up. You know, this might seem like an ancillary thing, but so I'm doing my AFLT, learning it, practicing it, teaching it, and I was looking at some show, one of these ancestry shows that they have on TV.
Uh-huh.
And the person that was being, whose family was being talked about was Rosie O'Donnell. And so she was in Ireland.
She's my cousin.
No, we're not really.
Well, all us Irish people are cousins.
Well, that's true.
She's probably
that's
my
true.
Cousin.
That's true. So she was in Ireland with the person that's doing the show. And the person was historically walking her through where her family originated from. And the major component that was happening for her family at that time was the famine, was the potato famine and the poverty.
Yeah.
And there was an opening for Rosie in that moment when she was standing in, on her ancestral land, because that's actually important for AFLT.
There it is.
She was standing on her ancestral land, and she got it in that second, like, oh, a lot of my stuff. No wonder this is so for me. This is what these people had to deal with for this amount of time, and I'm directly linked to that.
Yeah.
And she found across the years, across the hundreds of years, a connection into, and it really opened her up. And as I was watching it, I was like, that's AFLT. That's what AFLT does. So because for most of us, or for many of us, we can't travel back to the land that we come from.
Right. Right.
So what we can access through this technology is that same quality without having to physically be back in the land or the space where
totally
we originate.
I totally get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think people can go to places even here, a park or somewhere, a tree or a thing that, you know, you don't have to go back to your native land. But
no,
sometimes,
even,
I mean, I touch a tree and something happens.
Even in New York, I mean, it doesn't even have, that's great.
You know?
And I love trees,
and,
so
you
that's
know,
great. But, you know, even standing on the shower.
Right.
There water.
Okay.
Right.
There
so it's, but you have to remind people of this. We're so encultured not to
deny.
Right.
Yeah.
To not pay attention
in your head.
To that.
Everything has
not,
to be in the
yeah,
head.
Exactly. So, you know, I mean, New York City is one of the, you know, when you're walking, now this will show if you pay attention and how connected you are to it. When you're walking down the street in the spring, in the summer, and you see that one or two blades of grass growing up between the concrete, like that's a moment to connect there.
I totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree. Mm-hmm. And it's transformative. It
absolutely.
Can be. It can be.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so much to talk about, so much to go into. You talk about a felt sense. Can you give us any illustrations? By the way, that was a fantastic illustration with the Rosie O'Donnell experience. Mm. But any illustrations from your practice of this observer coming out, of this felt sense coming in, of aha moments? We talked about, you know, aha moments. And I, as I was talking to you about this, I really get a sense that probably with FOT, you get a lot of aha.
Yeah, you do get a lot of aha moments. And I'm just trying to think of an example. So I guess the last, I have aha moments all the time because I'm connected into this generally as much as possible.
Why don't you tell us your experience?
That's what I'm going to do.
There you go. Perfect.
So the last big aha moment that I had was actually the morning after the election. And I went to bed not knowing who was going to win the election.
Uh-huh.
And so when I woke up at 4:00 in the morning to go to the airport, the first thing I did was Google who won the election. And when it popped up who won the election, my most immediate response was distress, you know, distress in the body.
Yeah.
So clearly you all are getting a sense of where I stand on this.
Sure.
But so there was that distress. Uh-huh. But given that I had the awareness of this knowledge, I was then able to not spiral out into some place that I really took me out of my body and then would cause all kinds of difficulties for me as I had to go get on a plane and go where I was going, but actually allowed me to find a way to make sense of what my response, not the situation.
Right.
But what my response to the situation was. And that's where the felt sense comes into play. Another more direct way maybe for to explain it is if you hold in mind, oh no, I'm not even going to say hold in mind. If you go to the refrigerator, you may be able to just remember this, what it's like to put a lemon in your mouth. Mm-hmm. Right? And you put the lemon in your mouth, and like the body has this response to the lemon. Sometimes it might be a puckered jaw, puckered lips. Sure. It's very sour, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So then you're putting that lemon down, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're in some other situation, I don't know, and there's some trigger. There's something that reminds you of this lemon, right? And in the moment of that trigger or that recognition of the lemon, your body has the same response as if you were sucking that lemon.
Yeah,
okay.
Course.
So that's an example of how, well, that's not really a felt sense, but how trauma might take up residence mm-hmm. in the body. There's the original trauma, and then there's the various
reenactments.
Points, the reenactments.
The triggers.
The triggers. That cause the bodies. But I guess the best way to, I'm having a little challenge to think of a example,
well,
but the best way to describe a felt sense is to just say that it's that place of awareness just before it comes into your awareness.
Well,
that's
so that's Dara Williams here with us on The Positive Mind here on WBAI. We're going to take a short musical break, and we'll be back after this with more on AFOT. That's Aboriginal Focusing Oriented Therapy. And we're back. You're listening to The Positive Mind on 99.5 FM. I'm Ben Starr. We're here with Kevin O'Donohue, our guest, Dara Williams.
Tell us how trauma can begin in childhood, even though, you know, you're not necessarily exposed to a traumatic situation or the trauma is not as clearly defined as, let's say, a violent trauma. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about being a vulnerable child and what that can do for your future self.
Well, I think for the most part, all children are vulnerable to something or another.
I agree.
You know, for
totally
some
agree.
Of us, it's more in your face, and for others of us, it's more subtle. But I think I have a girlfriend that says, who's not an AFLT person necessarily, but who says, you know, I survived childhood, you know, and I think that's what we all do. We all survive childhood in some way or another. Excuse me. And so I think that, you know, when we're young and we're in little bodies, there's very little power that we have. Yeah. You know, we're kind of at the whim and wishes of the big people, of the adults that are around us. And so if we live in environments or we're in schools where maybe we have teachers who aren't the kindest or, you know, whatever it is, the adults that we come in contact with, that there's some trouble there.
Right.
A lot of the capacity of what a child can do is to attempt to modulate or influence the environment such that it makes it safer for them, because that's our instinctual need is to survive,
right?
And to survive as best we can in the best possible conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times when there's trouble in the environment, what children will do is that they'll suck back, they'll take in into their systems some of that trouble to try to assuage or pacify or make it a little bit better. And so for some of us, that might look like, excuse me, 1 minute. Excuse me, sorry.
Sure.
For some, that might look like a little piece, a big piece of something. You know, if there's domestic violence in your home, mm-hmm. or if there is abject poverty in your home,
right.
You acquire ways of being that allow you to be able to tolerate sure. and survive that.
Yeah. And you also must tell yourself a story about where you are. I mean, I know for myself, I mean, I think a child has to tell a story somehow to themselves that will make them feel safe on some level. If they were on chronically feeling unsafe, their nervous system would just give out and they just would not develop. I mean, I think children all need, you know, develop a story where they tell themselves, Mommy and Daddy love me on some level, in some way.
Well, you make up a story or you acquire some kind of behavior. You know, some okay. kind of behavior that manages the yeah. situation.
Right.
Or you check out. Sometimes that's a really good survival mechanism.
Yes,
and
yeah.
that's, you know, that ties back to AFLT, where the mechanisms that we create or that grow from our early experience, actually, we try to oftentimes get rid of those in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But really what we want to recognize is that those behaviors, those ways of thinking, were actually really, really good survival mechanisms.
You make a great point. We did a show last week on impulse control where, you know, for certain children that weren't stimulated enough, that their compulsion satisfied them instead of what a normal nourishing, nurturing environment would have done for them. So these impulses were adaptive, or these compulsions were, adaptive.
Mm-hmm.
They served the purpose in the moment. So we don't necessarily, in therapy, need to get rid of them. We need to see what purpose they serve.
What purpose they serve and grow you up with them.
Exactly.
So then you can make a mature adult decision
right.
about whether this is useful for you anymore.
Right.
And if it's not useful, then what do we need to do to transform that?
Yeah.
Or to manage it in such a way that it doesn't interfere with your current day
yes.
functioning.
Yeah. So somebody comes with a traditional symptom like anxiety or a depression. I mean, what we just talked about is going back to childhood, somehow tracking it there, certainly can give you room to make a choice. How does this show up in, take me through a client who's suffering from anxiety, let's say, in the AFOT model?
So, I mean, what that might look like after I've ascertained, you know, the person's capacity to, mm-hmm. because it... Excuse me. It may be about at first initially helping the person to just manage the anxiety. And by manage, basically what I'm talking about isn't like doing something to it or taking yeah. medication, which is necessary for
sure.
sometimes
sure
if you're suffering. We don't want you to suffer.
Right.
We want you to be able to sit beside that anxiety so we could explore it a little bit, so we could actually inquire into it and look to see what some of the antecedents of it might be.
Beautiful. So get the client to the place where they can sit beside the anxiety.
Well, you know, it's actually really once they've agreed that it's okay to work with the anxiety, might say something like, so where is that anxiety actually residing there
right.
with the body? And they'll say whatever they'll say.
Well, it's butterflies right under my belly button.
Butterflies under your belly button.
And it won't go away.
So is there more about that?
Yes. The butterfly is getting bigger and bigger, and it feels like it's taking up the whole inside of my belly.
Wow. So this butterfly is growing, getting bigger and bigger, and it's taking up the whole of your belly.
Yes.
What about that whole of your belly?
Yeah. It feels like it's never calm in there. It's always fluttering. And I don't know how to make it stop.
And is there some... Well, let's not rush so quickly into trying to make it stop.
But I want it to stop. Help me.
I wouldn't laugh at a therapy
session. No, of course not.
That's just Kevin. Sure. So what I might say is, so I can understand that's really uncomfortable and it really doesn't work for you anymore. But before we can get beyond it, we have to understand it. So if we could just, is it okay with you if we just be with this anxiety for a minute?
Okay.
Okay, great. So take a deep breath there. Right. So there's this anxiety. There's this butterfly that's taking up the whole of your stomach, I think
yes.
you said. The whole
no,
of your. So let's just be with that for a moment there, with the whole of your stomach. Mm. What is there about that that's wanting to be known in this moment?
That something's not right.
And this feeling that you're talking about, or this experience that you're talking about, can you remember when you first became aware of that butterfly, that feeling, that sense there?
Yeah.
So
probably I was four.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. So about how old were you when that first arose? So four. And what's going on there with you at four? Where are you there at four the first time you remember that?
I feel like I'm at the bus stop waiting to go to kindergarten.
And are there other people around?
Yes, I'm waiting, and the children are laughing at me in the bus.
Ah, so there's children laughing at you in the bus. Is this your first day of school or something?
No, they don't like me.
Mm,
And it's probably in October now. I've probably been going for 3 weeks now.
So it's just the beginning of school. You're waiting for the bus, and the children are laughing at you, and you say they don't like you.
Yeah, I say they don't like me.
Yeah. So is there something about that that's really grabbing you here and making you experience this anxiety? Is there something about the children not liking you?
Yeah, it makes me feel like I'll never.
So not. I don't want to know how you feel about it. So just checking in there.
Yeah.
Just check, because when you're feeling about it, you're actually
That's
thinking
true.
About
okay,
it. So I'm not interested. You know, it's nice to know how you feel about it. But I want you to check in there at that place that's taking up all of this space with butterfly flutters, where the children are laughing at you and you're 4 years old. What about that whole experience or that whole scenario there? Tell me more about that.
I want to escape. It's too much for me to handle.
Escape. Too much to handle.
Yeah.
Is there more about that?
Yes. I need to escape a lot. I often want to escape. It seems life is too hard for me.
Ah, so life is hard.
Life is too hard.
And there's a wanting to escape.
Always
yeah.
wanting to escape.
And so what did this anxiety, did this feeling of the butterfly in your stomach, was that a way to escape then?
It kind of takes me away from needing to escape and makes me focus on the anxiety.
So it gave you something else to focus on.
Yes.
Because you couldn't escape that.
That's right.
You had to go to school. So this anxiety came into play to actually help you out in that moment in a situation that you couldn't get away from, but gave you someplace else to be.
You know,
so you could be there
true.
In that place.
I used to sit on the bus all by myself just with my anxiety, but at least I was safe with the anxiety.
Mm. So is there something you might want to say to that place there that's 4 years old that was so wise and so clear about bringing this anxiety into place to help you in a place you couldn't get away from? Is there something you'd like to say there to that place?
Yeah. Thank you for being there when I needed you, but I'm not sure I need you anymore.
So maybe there's something there.
I don't want to be anxious
about
anymore.
Not needing it anymore.
Yeah.
And was it really helpful there?
It was helpful then.
Then, there
when I was
in that
four,
place
yeah,
at four.
It was very, very helpful. I don't think I would have survived if I had to face those kids.
So it helped you survive. So just sit there with that for a moment. Let that in. Let that in about how this anxiety, which you described as butterflies in the whole of your stomach, was really helpful to you at 4 years old.
Wow.
Just giving that place some awareness and some acknowledgement.
That makes it more tolerable.
Okay.
I can handle that.
So let me just take you one other place there with that.
Sure.
So now that you kind of have this recognition with this anxiety, as you're calling it, that you experience now as an adult, and is there any place you'd like to give some of that anxiety to? Is there a tree, a river? Is there any place that might help you out now in the present where you don't have to give it all away? Because sometimes when something's been accompanying you, it's too much to get rid of it all.
Yeah.
So is there just a bit of that you'd like to put someplace?
Maybe the glove compartment of my car.
The glove compartment of your car. Well, that's a good place for something that keeps you safe, you know, in your car. So I'm going to just pause for a second and just take a bit of that anxiety there and put it in the glove compartment of your car.
Okay.
Just do that now.
I'm seeing me do it.
Okay.
And it's good to know that it's there if I need it
exactly,
when I'm driving.
Exactly.
Oh, now I get it.
So just coming back for a moment now, just checking into that place. How is that place now there with the butterfly?
It's much, I think it's almost gone. It's almost gone. I just hear a flutter.
Yeah, okay. So now we're coming to the end, and just know that we can come back to this place or you can visit that place anytime.
So all my anxiety goes all the way back.
Most of the time.
To when I was four. And I probably went before then, too.
Probably. And if we were in a real session and had longer, we could have gone. We could have tracked it.
Right.
But that's what came in response to the question with the four-year-old place.
Right.
So that was significant. And you talked earlier about the onion, peeling the onion.
Yes, right.
And so that might be the first place we hit.
Right.
And then in some other session.
Yes.
It might go back, and it might actually be the anxiety of your grandmother.
That I want to find out.
Yeah,
about,
well, you'll have to come back next week.
Oh, gosh, I would feel so relieved if it was from my grandmother, and I wouldn't have to have any shame about it.
It was really brilliant watching you two work all of that out now.
Thanks, Dara. That was fun.
Really interesting and inspiring in some ways. And I want to let our listeners know that you are listening to The Positive Mind. Our guest today is Dara Williams, and she practices a therapy modality called Aboriginal Focusing Oriented Therapy. And you may have just heard her doing a little bit of work with Kevin right here on the air. And if that's interesting to you, you can reach her at ngonzi71@yahoo.com. She's going to be hosting a workshop on January 7th right here in Manhattan, here in Midtown Manhattan. And she's offering special rates for BAI listeners. So it's $35 early bird special, $50 at the door. That's January 7th. And for more information, you can email Dara at ngonzi71@yahoo.com. Thanks for being here, Dara. It's really fascinating stuff. You're a really interesting guest. And you're teaching us about something that, you know, we know very little about. So it's really, really interesting and great to have you here. And I hope our listeners are, you know, enjoying it and learning as much as I am right now. Tell me a little bit more about the process and about what might go into this workshop.
The workshop itself will be opportunities. We won't be so much most probably in a 2.5-hour workshop with people that don't have a lot of familiarity doing a lot of individual work like what I just did with Kevin. Mm-hmm. It'll be more group work. Uh-huh. But we will be doing experientials, having you have access to discovering some things about you and being able to leave from the workshop with something shifted. I can guarantee you that.
Really?
That something will shift as a result of leaving the workshop, having participated in the workshop. And it's actually going to be co-facilitated by myself and a colleague of mine, Isabella Don, who's Spanish-speaking. The workshop won't be done in Spanish.
Okay.
But she's bilingual, so that's helpful because it can connect people into their original language around emotions and whatnot. We may have some sharing. The participants will share among themselves and some whole group sharing in front. But it's really going to be quite no pressure, relax. Only pressure that might show up is any pressure you might put on yourself. But in terms of participating and being, we create a context really of being able to be comfortable. Again, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that it'll feel great, but it'll be comfortable.
You know, you have me wanting more. You know, just getting to age four is not enough. I want to go further. I really want to go further. So this workshop will whet your appetite. You'll get a sense of how far you can go. I mean, that's one of the things that seems to me about this therapy. And when we saw Sarah on the Between the Notes video, I was struck by there's always more to go.
There's always more to go. And, you know, something that's really, I think, really relevant and useful about AFLT is that it is cost and time efficient. So people are able to get to places like that little piece of experience that you had and don't have to be in therapy for 10 years.
Right.
around, you know, don't have to be spending all of that money.
Yes.
Right. And it's just, it's a very kind, compassionate way to work with people.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to fix. You know, okay, so you have anxiety. Okay, so you have depression. Okay, so you have PTSD. Mm-hmm. You have an eating problem. Okay, mm-hmm. you have compulsion. Mm-hmm. Okay, you know, you're not to blame. And, you know, we're here just to unfold and uncover.
Not only are you not to blame, but to remember that all of these challenges and difficulties are the result of some wisdom about how to take care of yourself at some point historically, where that's what you had to become, that's what you had to bring into existence to be all right in whatever situation
Love
or
it.
Circumstance.
See, this, Ben, is what the positive mind is all about. I think Armand designed the show to say you are wise enough on your own. I'm just a vehicle.
Hey, you know? You're okay.
You are more than okay. You're a wise being. And, you know, you used your depression, your anxiety, your withdrawal, your silence, whatever it was you did as a child or even beyond, to survive.
And to, that might have been the absolute appropriate response.
Yes. A genius response.
Yes.
Genius. Yes. Mama talked about getting into the radio business. His parents, his father repaired radios. So he wondered, why am I in the radio business? And he tracked it back. He said, oh, when I was 9 years old, my father had a radio shop. And here I am. Captivated audience.
Nice connection.
Finally. So, tremendous work. That's what I love about it. And it's not, you know, constantly having to dig and find reasons for the way that I am. It's so accepting. The therapist is there as a facilitator. You know, they're not there to do the work. You're
exactly.
there to do the work.
Exactly.
So mm-hmm. it's very client-centered. Mm-hmm. Last thing I want to talk about is vicarious trauma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How does that work?
It's a response to actually having either observed or heard or been in relationship to some kind of trauma that was happening that might not be happening particularly to you.
Okay.
And so you vicariously pick up the behaviors of adaption to that trauma
mm-hmm.
in an effort to be well yourself or to help out whomever it is that is experiencing the trauma. So that's one way.
I got it.
You know, and for a lot of people who are in the human service arena,
right.
we experience,
okay.
we can we're experience
exposed
if
to it
we don't
know.
Yes, we're exposed to it all
we
the time.
We have to be vigilant not
exactly.
to absorb it.
Exactly. So that's one form.
I see.
And then the other form of vicarious trauma, and there may be other forms, but in relationship to AFLT, is the intergenerational piece, where you may be carrying responses and behaviors that actually are somebody's way back in your lineage.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Inherited. So,
we
did a show on the inherited family trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, children, grandchildren of the Holocaust survivors can relate to this inherited trauma that, you know, their parent or whoever didn't get to live out, but they're somehow living it out.
I have one story for you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell it real quick.
And I just wanted to say, you know, trauma is a sliding scale. We're
it's
all
a sliding
traumatized.
Scale.
We all have been exposed to things where we had to shut down.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, we're talking about trauma on the positive mind. We talk about it often, but, you know, we're just talking about having to put yourself shut down.
I want to tell this little story about vicarious trauma.
Yeah.
We're in a household of three generations, a grandmother, a mother, and a daughter.
Right.
And every Thanksgiving, the mother is making the turkey for dinner, and she cuts off the legs and cooks the turkey. Every year this is going on.
Okay.
And one year the daughter says, Ma, why are you cutting off the turkey's legs? You know, and the mother said, because my mother did it. And so go ask your grandmother. So the daughter goes and talks to her grandma and says, Grandma, Ma cooks this turkey every year. She cuts the legs off. She cooks it. Why is that? Why did you? She said she learned it from you. The grandmother said, because I didn't have a pan that was big enough to cook the turkey in.
Oh, there you go.
There's the passing down.
There we go. So it could be something light and cute and nice and fun and the ritual.
Yeah, or just like how we learn behavior from our
exactly.
adults
right.
in our lives.
Wow, a certain deprivation.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And I'm wondering, like, you know, you learn and you change best from a sense of abundance. And Dara, we have to thank you for being here. You give us an abundant explanation of this and an abundant modality.
Mm.
It's so
That's
rich.
That's a good way to describe it.
It's so rich that change becomes natural or not change, just acceptance becomes natural going through this process. I really felt a sense of empowerment from it. So
thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you again, Dara. And if you're looking for more information out there at home about Dara's workshop, that's January 7th, you can always call us here at the center, or you can send her an email, ngonzi71@yahoo.com. That's ngonzi71@yahoo.com. And you can send us an email. We love hearing your feedback and getting your thoughts and comments on the show, positivemind@wbai.org. Dara, thanks again for being here.
Thank you for
having me. Really appreciate it. And Kevin, always great working with you, Kevin.
It is fun. Thanks.
And thanks everyone at home for listening and contributing during the fun drive. We'll be back, same time. Take care.